interrupting the current neo-uranial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM593. And remember, being free, not three, but free, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed because you don't know what you missed until you do get behind the woodshed. It's pretty much that simple. Anybody who's been listening to me for any length of time knows that. Roll your sleeves up and go check out. You'll find a whole other world than what we've been told. Then it's how do you address it? Because that was all an illusion to keep us, our attention, somewhere else. And part of what's being exposed anymore is the they don't care. They are now unwrapping the whole thing, and we get to see the whole enchilada if we dare look at the ugliness of it. But they know that that was our duty to stop. Remember, we had the Republic if we keep it, not anybody who wanted to encroach. And that's what's going on, and that's what's been allowed to go on. Is what interested me on this next story was about this first notice that we're going to hear from is the Venezuela gangs that are confirmed now by ICE, government agency ICE Immigration, to exist. These gangs are existing, and by other reports, these gangs are said to have carrying AK-47 weapons in Colorado, and they're taking over entire apartment complexes and committing many felonious activity against the population, while the local police apparently are doing nothing. Now, this is gang warfare, so be very careful here what I'm going to suggest on what to look at while the police apparently do nothing. But Colorado has a citizen's arrest provision in law, don't it? Find that out. And felony arrests provide that what? Do your research. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals rules that illegals don't have Second Amendment rights. Just 5 months after the federal judge ruled that a ban on gun possession by those in the country illegally was unconstitutional, a three-judge panel of federal appeals courts has ruled just the opposite. On Tuesday, a three-judge panel of the Fifth United States Court of Appeals ruled in the case against Jose Paz Medina Cantu, that Second Amendment rights do not apply to those who have entered the country illegally. Medina Cantu was arrested in 2022 by Border Patrol agents and charged with illegally possessing a handgun and unlawfully reentering the country after being deported. Under Bruin standard, our precedent dictates that Medina Cantu's Second Amendment challenge fails at the first step, the ruling stated. We held in Portillo Munoz that the Second Amendment's plain text does not cover the conduct of aliens who are unlawfully present in the United States, consistent with Bruin's mandate, which we reached our decision in Portillo Munoz by interpreting the text of the Second Amendment, i.e. the meaning of the phrase, the people. So I suppose that means it doesn't require a militia either. And I say to that, good. And beyond that, it seems to me there are a couple of problems with this that might need the Supreme Court to clarify, if it would, when you look at this case and how this works out. On the other hand, it's not like we don't already have these limitations, some of these limitations on our rights to bear, for instance, in the courthouse or in cars, etc., that I don't agree with, and they seem to not concern the shall not infringe is pretty absolute where you're not illegal yourself within your use. But now for now here, if we just look at what's going on in Colorado and this invasion that we've been told was coming because of the open border, and hear why it's so important to have some control over that border. You don't have to stop people. Just check who's coming in. Well, what they got snuck in, as we had heard, were on top of the Chinese warriors that were coming in secretly themselves. There were gangs coming in, and they're being also used as mules to bring drugs and all kinds of stuff in. Well, now they're starting to take over apartment complexes in Colorado, I suppose. But for this, right now, the Second Amendment, based on this decision, does not extend to people illegally in this country, and certainly at least committing crimes. And that's another thing. Look very carefully at this case. Not only is this guy illegal, but he's committed crimes inside, and he was deported once and came back in. So there's a whole lot about this guy that, if you look at the normal determination on what makes a good immigrant citizen, he's failed right off the bat. So this shouldn't even be a hard one to understand. So maybe those of you in Colorado, and maybe anywhere else that starts to pop up, you tell the governor and the sheriffs and the police here, in particular Colorado, that they you might need to communicate to them about that when the border-breaching Venezuelan gangs are breaching the peace, and worse here, that if they don't stop the breach of the peace, you want to work out what they'll acknowledge as the proper felony arrest, in particular in the case of resisting arrest is. That provision should be around. It's, I think, a common law allowance, whether or not it's statutory. I've found, though, in practice, you need to get clarity. You don't want to move these people because that ends up being kidnapping against you or abduction. You want to work out how you're going to get them arrested under a felony, and how you're, if they're not going to do it, and then you're going to step up to defend yourself and those in your community, you're going to stop the arrest. And then you don't want to move them until you worked out how you're going to get them to a magistrate, because look very carefully at your laws. There's a whole lot going on here you will have to be responsible for. I'm not saying do anything. A lot of people don't get this right. So the problem is that we're seeing some real harm going on in places that the current Biden regime allowed, under plan. They want to cause division. They want us to go nuts. I'm starting to see a little bit of that. When I saw this story, I think it's important that we can look at this to use as a guideline. Use it as a notice to the officials that are derelict in their duty, if they still are, and then move this thing forward to say, no, there's nothing right about this, that the breach of the peace is the most paramount duty that you have, especially in the office of the sheriff. So, you want to communicate that to them to start with. Build your record to do that. I would suggest do not act unilaterally on this. These are very serious things. They're looking for excuses to go after people, Americans, notwithstanding what's going on there. So this is the interesting dynamic. I've been trying to prep people for how to do this for many, many years, watching that it would come, thinking that it would come. It was written that it would come. It was known by people that it would come. And here we are. We're starting to see it. So a part of that information, the information war and the communication conduits that we need to maintain is who gets to disseminate that information, that communication, and what can be disseminated. Not as determined by some agenda, but by property law. We get a little case coming up here. Give us an interesting sight. May not be something I'm liking to see, but property law is property law. The Internet Archive loses its appeal of a major copyright case. Hachette versus Internet Archive is brought by book publishers objecting to the Archive's digital lending library. The Internet Archive has lost a major legal battle in a decision that could have a significant impact on the future of Internet history. Today, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit ruled against the long-running Digital Archive, upholding an earlier ruling in Hachette versus Internet Archive that found that one of the Internet Archive's book digitization projects violated copyright law. Notably, the appeals court ruling rejects the Internet Archive's argument that its lending practices were shielded by the fair use doctrine, which permits for copyright infringement in certain circumstances, calling it unpersuasive. And I have to say, I've been unpersuaded by that Internet Archive's argument since I heard about it. I was really disappointed. I'm still disappointed. But here we are. And remember, for as long as it lasts for you, notwithstanding this argument, they said it may have there's a more lawsuits coming along this, that may very well take out this Internet of history that people could use into the future. But as long as it's still there, friends of the Internet, of the network here, and this broadcast have uploaded some of the Behind the Woodshed episodes for any future daily dose of reality needed to parse through the deceptions of the day. And I've made the broadcast particularly not date specific for that reason. And I started doing that when I started this whole thing, just to be as neutral to the time as possible, because these stories come along and they repeat themselves, not necessarily as the same thing, but you'll see evidences of them because the plans work to incrementally take us out. And the message I present hopefully will have a long stand into the future relative to the continuation of upholding what I call the black and white against what people taking oaths of office to say they are holding it. We find out they don't do anything of the sort. So you can get behind the woodshed, possibly the Internet Archive, as long as it lasts, as long as they don't, these copyright people don't take it, as long as they stop being kind of dumb on what the Internet Archive feels is a fair use, which it really wasn't. They're doing nothing to contribute to the works. And so take the information off the Internet Archive as long as you can, and so you can take it to those that misbehave behind a woodshed. Continue reading here on this report. In March 2023, the district court ruled in favor of the publishers. Judge John G. Cottle found that the Internet Archive had created derivative works, arguing that there was nothing transformative about it copying and lending. After the initial ruling in Hatchet Internet Archive, the parties negotiated, and the details of which have not been disclosed, though the archive still filed an appeal. James Grimmelman, a professor of digital and internet law at Cornell University, says the verdict is not terribly surprising in the context of how the courts have recently interpreted fair use. Internet Archive did eke out a Pyrrhic victory in the appeal. Although the Second Circuit sided with the district court's initial ruling, it clarified that it did not view the Internet Archive as a commercial entity, instead emphasizing that it was clearly a nonprofit operation. Grimmelman sees this as the right call. Quote, I'm glad to see the Second Circuit fix the mistake. Grimmelman signed an amicus brief in the appeal, arguing that it was wrong to classify the use as commercial. And that may turn a little bit on whether or not they can actually go after them in the amount that they would had they been a for-profit issue, when you look at the context of the property law relative to the commercial protection that the Congress gave in the Copyright Act. In a statement, Internet Archive Director of Library Services Chris Freeland expressed disappointment, quote, in today's opinion about the Internet Archive's digital lending of books that are available electronically elsewhere. We are reviewing the court's opinion and will continue to defend the rights of libraries to own, lend, and preserve books. So whether there will be an appeal or what the disposition or ultimate existence of the Internet Archive will be, we'll have to wait and see on this one. But again, a very interesting problem on who gets to keep control of this information that we need, and really just for information's sake. And against what? The property rights. There's always going to be this tension. And those of you that are doing fair use, go look at what fair use really is. They say it's not a derivative work, that you got to make a derivative work. And some people have figured out how to do that on the Internet, and some people haven't. On the other hand, I took a public domain, remember that the cricket that you hear, the sound was taken from a public domain cricket file that a music owner said I was violating. So they will make these claims as well. And so this whole thing isn't over relative to the courts always allowing and getting it right, or the copyright holders actually being honest. And so we are going to have continuing problems with all this. And I think that's what maybe Internet Archive was hoping for, but really their argument for fair use, they weren't doing what they were supposed to. But continuing from last week, and the war on our communication lines, our comm conduits, Durov arrests first salvo in final battle in 30-year war on privacy. So this is a big deal what France came after us on through Durov. And I'm not a fan of Telegram by any means, so please don't underwrite this, make this as an underwriting for Telegram. I am not on Telegram. And if you go read their terms of service, maybe you'll figure out why. Like, I'm not on lots of places, and some places we are, and like X, I don't do much of anything there, don't get much response, but I don't give them any information either. But you just have to listen to what their terms of service are, and you're going to find almost nowhere is actually privacy placed, and almost nowhere is not have some access to you, and almost nowhere is not susceptible to having somebody make something up against you. And so I haven't been such a fan of this, except the, if you will, peer-to-peer style of stuff that you can get in contact with people. But making that more universal is a little bit more trouble and more problematic, and so we'll see how that works out. The network here, we're working toward making that a thing, actually making it so that there was actually no registry on who did what, and so that there's no way to backtrack and find out what's going on. But anyway, that's still under work and still under consideration. But on Monday, Telegram CEO Pavel Durov was detained in France immediately upon landing in the country. He was eventually charged with a litany of crimes, including importing a cryptology tool. It is only the latest attack in a war against privacy that goes back more than three decades. So as we see, these wars are longstanding wars. And I thought this was a very insightful reminder, if you will, of the story. We're talking to Zimmerman, the gentleman who did the privacy code originally. Writing in 2021 on the 30th anniversary of PGP's release, Zimmerman warned that his old enemies were coming again and pleaded for the public to take the threat seriously. Quote, "We see it in Australia, the UK, the US, and other liberal democracies. 20 years ago, after all, we all thought we won the crypto wars. Do we have to mobilize again? Veterans of the crypto wars may have trouble fitting into their old uniforms, but remember the scene in Pixar's The Incredibles, when Mr. Incredible tries to squeeze into his old costume, we are going to need some fresh troops." So listen up, all my listeners, and all the ones that can influence youngs and the youngins that are listening. This is really a serious thing coming against us. It's going to take some interesting ways to, if you're going to be forced to comply, how to actually still not comply, as I keep pointing out in broadcasts. But you start looking and reading things to see where those, if you will, loopholes, the place that their jurisdiction doesn't attach, actually exists, and you just don't stay, you don't go there. It is time for a new generation of digital freedom fighters to take a center stage from our dial-up and Usenet using forefathers, users of TikTok, Twitter, Telegram, and Signal. Unite! You have nothing to lose but your digital chains. Soon to be sustainable blockchains in the Siberian gulag that they've set up for us. And continuing on that little Telegram thing, and relative to the use of a petition of habeas corpus or similar relief, as we see this, when I started to hear, you hear little details that are popping out. Very interesting. I'm surprised that he hasn't used this. But we'll see as we read through. It'll be up to him to do what he's going to do, or his attorneys, who you hear, will make arguments that really don't float. And I've brought, over decades, I've brought plenty of those. I think last episode as well, the Children's Health website, they got all those attorneys on that page had it all messed up, all wrong. And they were just screaming, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth about how it was the wrong decision. But they didn't meet, remember, the false claims. They didn't make a false claim. Oh, there was a false claim made, but it wasn't made relative to the statutory relief and remedy that was provided. Very important. But same thing with the habeas, the restraint of your liberty. Well, it turns out as we read through there, it had been reported that Durov was already working with the French government on some terrorist matters. And he just came out to clarify. He finally spoke on this. And he says that he was working with the governments on terrorist issues to solve the matters. And the governments knew how to get in touch with us. They said it could have cleaned it up a bit. It could have been a little bit simpler, but they didn't. It wasn't that they never worked with them or he wasn't in touch to solve problems. That's not what he was adverse to. So it didn't need the theater that we've been watching. So this is, again, pretending a different type of need. Remember, this is Five Eyes. Don't underestimate that. I didn't mention that last week. Forgot to. This is like 5, 7, and 20 eyes here, all involved with this. And they want those Telegram keys, the cryptographic keys, for the privacy part of this. So, was talking about that ulterior motive for those keys, the encryption keys to the Telegram kingdom. And it's now being reported that what, as I would have expected, the law would actually apply to and be available to, that reinforcing of the tangible direct connection to the commission of a crime, as I've been questioning, that we can read. For example, Regulation 20 makes the intermediary service, in this case Telegram, only responsible for illegal activity using its service if it was deliberately collaborated in its illegal activity, as we're doing an analysis here on this next tab, if you get it, and get the link in the broadcaster. Providing encryption and anonymity specifically does not qualify as a deliberate collaboration in illegal activity. And thereby, Pavel Durov is innocent pursuant to French law, as Craig Murray notes in this article. Now, there's a thing about this. Back when Zimmerman's talking about doing the private encryption for everybody, I think it was in 1984, France made a law that they had to get those certified. That certification about that is what they're talking about. And what that meant is that France, or any country with that law, wanted a back door. So how they're going to justify all that, I'm not quite sure. But this is what's partly in play in this Pavel Durov case and the apparent abuse of the law, as even Craig Murray has analyzed to say, and I'm just using this as a source to go quickly through, the detention of Pavel Durov is being portrayed as a result of the EU Digital Services Act, but having spent my day reading the EU Services Act, a task I would not wish on my worst enemy, it does not appear to me to say what it is being portrayed as. But remember, this may not be the only act they're coming under, as may be coming out now, but we'll look at this anyway. To show, again, we didn't need the theater. When you hear that he was already working with France in thwarting terrorist activities, this is where I bring up the habeas corpus. They're apparently charging him with stuff they were using, taking the benefit of. Apparently, they want better, more control of it, as I've been saying, is possibly the actual prevailing idea here underneath all this. Regulation 20 requires a deliberate collaboration in illegal activity. And at paragraph 30, there is specifically no general monitoring obligation on the service provider to police the content itself. In fact, it's very strong that the Telegram is under no obligation to take proactive measures. In fact, we go look at what Pavel is talking about. They are taking measures. And this is the thing about what France is tending to do. They want to overwhelm the matter with things that are actually going on that they're doing to protect, but they're not giving credit for. And to my mind, this all started to lead up to an unwarranted restraint of his liberty and that of his corporation. Remember, they went after him instead of the corporation. All this would be on the Telegram company, not him. The French charges appear, however, to be extremely general and not to relate to particular specific communications. This is determined by Craig to be an abuse. What the Digital Services Act does not contain is a general obligation to hand over unspecified content or encryption keys to police forces or security agencies. It is also remarkably reticent on, quote, misinformation, which is another thing France is bringing up to try and say that they're thwarting. So, in short, the arrest of Pavel Durov appears to be pretty blatant abuse and only very tenuously connected to the legal basis given as justification. As I said, that's the color of authority they're using in order to use this. That may, a color is not actual. It's just that it gives you the appearance of a lawful authority. But it's actually authorita. It doesn't exist lawfully, the authorita that they're wielding. This is simply a part of the current rising wave of authoritarianism in Western, quote, democracies, as he concludes there. What is more authoritarian here than the French intelligence or the CIA controlling the conduit upon the free speech is allowed to be incriminate oneself here as well. They want to be able to take all of that ability to protect yourself relative to any incrimination and take it away. And interestingly, in my mind, as that's been explained to me, that's the distinction actually between European due process and an American due process, where they essentially can cause you to be guilty, if you will, and then do the investigation, as I was complaining last week. But that's still not due process. That's still not proper. And in particular, where I was talking last week, there's always a remedy for these things, and the habeas comes to mind in order to point out, to challenge that through that mechanism, that remedy to do that, or something similar if it's not available in some of these places by name. It took so long to bring the charges as well. Remember, it was way back in spring, as they weighed the risk of being caught not faithfully applying these regulations, if these are also applicable, which could not apply to Telegram or Pavel specifically without probable cause for the actual crime that they're alleging, and why the complaint was so generalized as to obscure that point as well, that even Craig points out here to us. So this, again, we're pointing out, contrary to what Macron said, this is about politics. It's not justice at all. The prosecutors in the courts of France do not appear to be any more independent of undue influence than Ukraine or any other seemingly rule of law and democracy separated, you know, government. As we witnessed the Ukraine prosecutor being replaced by the government upon the insistence of Biden through the leveraging of $1 billion of aid to Ukraine to oust the prosecutor who was in charge of looking at the Biden stuff. And so, and we're going to hear a little bit about that at the very end of the broadcast, as I just remembered some of these tabs. This all comes back up around in the news. It's pretty fascinating. But there's much, much more to read on this article and to understand from Craig Murray's post. So get the link at the Behind the Woodshed blogcaster at reallibertymedia.com to familiarize yourself with the fast approaching liabilities and potential culpabilities that are being allowed to themselves, the government, these sovereigns that, again, can indict and ham sandwich. It's not so simple here anymore, and we want to be able to be cognizant so we're not blindsided. If they're going after the billionaires, Who are you? Who are you going to be? Then you watch how they do it, like Scott Ritter and all these other journalists. They take you out and they take out all your funds. They take out your ability to survive. And some of you will say, well, I don't do any of that. Okay, well, that's, you're not keeping that republic. You're not keeping the knowledge up for yourself. You're not keeping the application. That silence is what is then focuses the heat of the war on the people that are actually in the fight. These are targeting these billions. And so this is a very interesting, I don't think I've ever seen this in all my life about how, what they're doing. Another billionaire CEO isn't going to let what happened to Durov happen to him, it seems. And as I read this story, it's quite amazing. Have you ever heard of an open threat by a corporate CEO vowing to use U.S. government power to sanction a country's assets? It just happened. If you think this guy here is just the world's wealthiest dude in the world, boy, corporate wagging the dog is this thing. Shades of the banana wars. Musk threatens to go after Brazilian government assets. Tech mogul Elon Musk has vowed to seek seizure of Brazilian government assets in the United States if Brazil does not return property belonging to his company, X, formerly Twitter, ex-Twitter, and SpaceX as well. Last week, the Supreme Court of Brazil ordered the operations of X to be immediately suspended and threatened a fine of 5,000 Brazilian reals, or $8,900, per day against anyone trying to sidestep the ban on accessing the platform using a VPN. The judge gave Google and Apple 5 days to remove X from their Apple store. The ruling was upheld Monday by a panel of federal Supreme Court judges. The court also froze the accounts of satellite internet provider Starlink, a subsidiary of Musk's SpaceX, to ensure the payment of fines imposed for failing to appoint a new legal representative for X in Brazil. It's a very interesting dynamic, too. He pulled the company out, and they want to force him to have a representative, even though he doesn't want to have a company there. So this is just listen to the dynamics that are shifting in the world, the transformation that's going on. Whether or not this happens, I was just intrigued that he's invoking the power of the United States to go protect him. And partly I can understand it because of how he's connected, but partly I can't see how that's going to work. We're going to see. Very interesting. Quote, unless the Brazilian government returns the illegally seized property of X and SpaceX, we will seek reciprocal seizure of government assets, too, Musk wrote in a social media platform. Quote, hope Lula enjoys flying commercial, the billionaire added, referring to the Brazilian president Lucius Ignacio Lula da Silva. Musk was responding to a tweet in the news report about the U.S. government's confiscation of that jet used by President Nicolas Maduro, claiming it violated Washington's sanction against Caracas. And that jet was just being serviced in Dominican Republic. And seized it was. So I must have missed the part in the U.S. Constitution though, allowing for corporate CEOs that can directly threaten to use power of the United States government to confiscate another country's assets and the governmental functionaries of that government. So this is really interesting times. Wait till everything is blockchain to that tyranny, though. Watch how this all works. How quickly this... And it's gone, folks. This is how fast this is all going to happen if the world allows it. And they seem to be willing to do so. This tyranny will be working as long as that tyranny can show it's fair and balanced, as we can read the standards right in the notice to us of what's going on in the world, how it's going to be working down as it goes forward. Again, notwithstanding any appeals of it, we can't tell that yet. As we go along, we see, I kind of pick up these things before they go to appeal to say, there's the principle working. I think it's going to stay here pretty close to this. Court slaps down NIH for unconstitutional censorship. Now listen again for how it was unconstitutional. Remember, if they fix that, then it's not unconstitutional. And it is continued down that road. The D.C. Circuit Court has declared that the National Institutes of Health, NIH, violated the Constitution by using keyword filters to censor comments on its social media platforms. The court's decision stems... Okay, I got to interject here. Listen very carefully at what they're talking about. This is not the platforms itself. It has to do with the accounts for the government. And in this case, this is a government agency. So keep this in line, because you're not going to jump into the private sector to have the same outcome. But relative to the federal, these government agencies and the government, American, United States federal agencies, this is how we're going to go through and read this. The court's decision stems from a dispute involving People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which argued that their comments were unfairly targeted by NIH's filtering system on Facebook and Instagram. This case highlights ongoing tensions between government control and free speech on digital platforms. The crux of the court's decision hinged on three critical findings regarding the nature of the forums in question. First, the NIH's social media accounts were determined to be limited public forums, a classification that allows for certain restrictions but not indiscriminate censorship. Second, while the NIH has the authority to curtail off-topic discussions, the court found that the agency's keyword filters overstepped this boundary by blocking on-topic and potentially valuable contributions, particularly those of PETA, on posts relating to animal testing. Now, think about what I just read there, and think about what they were doing in these other areas, subject matter areas, these agencies on their platforms. In delineating the scope of acceptable moderation, the court noted that NIH's social media guidelines were intended to keep discussions relevant to the posted content. Relevant to the posted content, what the agency posted. However, it criticized the agency's keyword filters as overly broad and lacking sensitivity to context, which, according to the court, resulted in unconstitutional viewpoint discrimination. Notably, NIH's keyword list included terms directly related to animal rights activism such as animal, cruel, and even specific hashtags like stop animal testing. The court was particularly scathing in its assessment of the keyword strategy, labeling the approach as not only unreasonable, but also inflexible and disconnected from the nuances of real discussion. This misstep, according to the court, skewed the public discourse significantly against PETA's viewpoint, disrupting a fair and balanced dialogue about NIH-funded activities. So where there is an account of any public forum status, any filtering must be constitutional to allow for fair and balanced dialogue. And I'll be interested to see how this applies to an agency like the CDC with this fair and balanced marketplace of ideas that we're supposed to be going through and our discourse in the public relative to what you know I was saying. And let's now get it on over to YouTube. If they have a statement on there that you go make a comment and you put in something and then YouTube blocks you and it doesn't become fair and balanced, now maybe YouTube might be subject. But this starts to set up the standard relative to what I made my complaint, let's say, to Community Notes on X Twitter. Completely out of context, the response. People, like, don't even read what you wrote. Like I was saying, YouTube comes in and takes out content that I've put up through RLM or any syndication sites. They claim medical, like I suggested a couple of times here last episode, they claim it's medical misinformation. I'm talking about the law. And you go to appeal and they don't care. So I'm not saying that this would address that, but it certainly sets a standard on how this is supposed to be done. Again, it's going to take a little bit more to get at these platforms than what we're seeing. But at least to these government agencies, and they're the most serious ones when you look at they're giving the advice, like CDC was giving advice, and then they get into you were ordering action. They don't have a right to do that. So they couldn't necessarily, when you go into their posting and you put that, they can't kick you out. Well, you could, but then they'd be susceptible to this case or your lawsuit to enjoin them from doing that as well. In other words, we build our steps little by little to gain more power back so that this communication conduit isn't fully controlled by the government. And we now see it can be for these government institutions taking federal fundings for certain, they can be held to a constitutional parameter that may not be allowable by the overall platform itself. And relative to more programmability by the global financial system in its attack on information sources, U.S. slaps sanctions on Rossiya Segodnaya Media Group. The United States Department of Treasury said in a statement on Wednesday that it had sanctioned 10 individuals and two entities responsible for what it called attempts to influence the outcome of November's presidential elections. Quote, today, the Department of Treasury Office of Foreign Asset Control designated 10 individuals and two entities as part of a coordinated U.S. government response to Moscow's malign influence efforts. Remember that malign influence operations is what they're after, malign influence efforts targeting the 2024 U.S. presidential election, statement said. So I guess we can be assured Treasury will put sanctions on the 51 CIA agents, Hillary Clinton, the Democratic Party, the perpetrators of Russiagate, the election officials of the states as they violated those, the social media sites and video platform, the dinosaur media, and the U.S. military, and a host of others for doing the same thing, right? Right? Well, some, right? We have it there, right there, though. We see the hypocrisy of all this. And we, you know, I've already been saying, they do that to hide their own problems within the gates. In the past episode, I had a question here. You listen to me any length of time. The question whether Tim Pool was a tool. Hot on the heels of the U.S. slapping sanctions on Rossiya Zagornia Media Group, today there's this. Media startup from Benny Johnson, Tim Pool, and Dave Rubin was a secret Russian influence campaign, an indictment alleges. A media startup from the reactionary luminaries such as Tim Pool, Benny Johnson, Dave Rubin, Lauren Southern, and others secretly received funding from Russia, a new federal indictment alleges. These people are luminaries, folks. Oh, my goodness. How did the bar fall off the peg onto the ground and we don't have a standard anyway? Luminary. Just from that description, whatever my observations of Tim Pool were, this is a hit piece, for sure, to promote the underlying agenda of the lying that the government does, to remove any sources of information, however reliable or useful, to use those to attack Russia while at the same time ignoring the real perpetrators of malign influence or election tampering, which is the United States government itself, and members of the political parties, such as the 51 CIA agents, the botched secret disservice allowing the Trump assassination attempt and Hillary Clinton's election stunt. Oh, and don't forget Benghazi about that. Article reads, the Department of Justice charged two employees of Russia Today with violations of Foreign Agent Registration Act, saying they participated in, quote, a $10 million scheme to create and distribute the content to U.S. audiences with hidden Russian government messaging. The press release from the DOJ says that the Russian state broadcaster, RT, orchestrated a massive scheme to influence the American public by secretly planting and financing a content creation company on U.S. soil. Although the company isn't listed in the indictment, context clues reveal it is most likely Tenet Media. And purportedly, this is a right-wing MAGA media, apparently setting up for us Russia Collusion 2.0 now, which, if you're keeping track, would be supporting the opposite candidate that Putin just favored in Comrade Kamala, Mean Harris, because of her infectious laugh, Putin said. Can you believe this nonsense? Or is Putin a grandmaster chess move he's just played? You need to go watch the video, because by the words he used, I couldn't tell. When I go watch the video, I think I know exactly what's going on. I'll let you do your own power, use your powers of observation. He just said to the global public, for Russia would support the infectious laugh. Think about the dynamics on this. Anyway, should every media outlet then covering Putin's favoring comrade Kamala, Mean Harris, be charged with Russian collusion for carrying Russian content to influence the election and profiting thereby? And if not, with these other MAGA media brigands that they're going after, why not? On its website, the U.S. company that they're describing, Company One, again, no direct naming. This is all done by people fabricating context. Could very well be the truth, but this is what how we pull this out and we can start to see it just seems to be a big psyop. Whether or not these folks are involved, whether or not it's true. But Company One describes itself as a network of heterodox commentators that focus on Western political and cultural issues and identifies six commentators, including Commentator 1, Commentator 2, and its talent, the indictment alleges. Again, there are no names, they're just a status. The indictment also highlights one of the founders of Tenet, Lauren Chen, claiming she worked to deceive the commentators about the funding of the group. The indictment claims the personalities of Tenet were not aware of the backgrounds and intentions of two Russians, that the funding for the company came through a Canadian shell company from a front man named Edward Grigorian, who did not exist. In a statement on X, Poole said, if the indictment was true, he was a victim, that he was and other personalities were deceived. Johnson said in the statement that he is disturbed by the allegations in today's indictment, which make clear that myself and others, not me, him, Johnson, and other influencers were victims in this alleged scheme. And alleged, all right. That's right, just alleged. All these people are presumed innocent until proven guilty by their non-existent peers in a U.S. court of injustice, aren't they? But I take note in having reported on the U.S. attacks on journalists and journalism, free speech and free association, despite First Amendment rights prohibiting interference, the government is in willful infringement under color of authority. Itself a malign interest, itself a malign entity, organization, to interfere with the elections and free discourse through free association and information acquisition to inform the populace, however rightfully or wrongfully some government bureaucrat thinks they can decide. The duped victimhood is a nice touch, though, isn't it? This one? It's the pawns on the game board, it seems to me, as I looked at this, as well as it does taint the alternative media luminaries. Luminaries, folks. I can't get around that. Luminaries. Jeez. Even so, tainting alternative media reactionary luminaries, but with no culpability, and providing the government a plausible basis to attack Russian-based media through a straw man. And horrors, denigrating a political candidate for president of the United States, Trump, in an open election interference. Remember, CIA endorsed Kamala. And so we see the connections. When does that crime get stopped within the gate? So these U.S. government operatives using the willing DOJ are pretty creative in all this, aren't they? Take note of it. Take note of how creative it can get. I asked in a past episode whether Tim Pool was a tool. Apparently, the bigger question is, whose tool is Tim Pool? And there's three options. This all brings to mind this sort of thing is why donations are required to exist. Private donations. Funding a media network such as Real Liberty Media can't come from an organization or organized alliance that can be targeted. Because I've talked about this over and over. Not just donations, but any people that get together mutually helping themselves. Do not be an organization. You got to use your non-dependent separateness to and work together without formality, so that it can't be targeted. They target these things either rightfully or through fabrication, however deceptively constructed by the government, using the tools to target feigned foreign adversaries to cover for unaccountable official covert domestic interference and attacks at home to hide the truth. To hide the truth you're supposed to hear and cover over their systemic corruption, the propaganda or the cognitive warfare that they're committing within the gates as well. And to counter all that relative to private donations to private networks, I have to thank you, everyone, that has donated privately to reallibertymedia.com to keep this effort enforcing the congressional mandate and mission in evolutionarily engaging in counter-propaganda tactics and related work. As Congress enacted, as I put on my blogcasters, you'll see it if you've ever gone there, that we do this message going across the country, around the world. We got hits from all over the world coming in to listen to our content here. And I'm told this week we're now hitting around 20,000 listeners a week on various syndicated channels running 24/7 that the listeners helped to establish. Certainly that the donations helped to go work to put the time to. And so this donation comes from all over. Your listeners are global for us here on this little bitty network, as roughshod as it is. So maybe consider, if you're there following a show, show support, make a comment, even a criticism. I really am asking earnestly, you got a down thumb, you know, down thumb down. Give me a reason. Tell me what. Tell me what's up. We got one, too, today, I thought I saw. And very good. Okay, fine. This is some interaction. It's better than no interaction if you're listening. You don't like it, let me know why. I want to know whether there's some substance behind that. Why? Because I need to go educate myself if I'm incorrect. And so that's the main part there. Interact, folks. Tell people to show up if you can. Hopefully the interactions are constructive, because that's the only way we're going to be able to help each other out. So again, if you can find the donation button, keep things going. This is showing us that organizations are used against people. And I may not understand how this internet works and social media and how you get listenership and all that. I mean, I have no clue. My numbers show that. But there are those that profess to be the luminaries that get played. They were deceived. How do you get deceived on a straw man? Someone that doesn't exist. It's pretty interesting, just all around. Maybe consider also not supporting relative to this story. This was pretty despicable in my mind. I guess opinions could vary, but not supporting anything Glenn Beck or his media group put out when they took out Lauren Chin on a mere unsubstantiated allegation and not letting her enjoy the presumption of innocence until shown to the contrary. Not presumed guilty and subject to the informal investigations that didn't happen to immediate implausible charges, which they claim, from nothing more than a bureau rat's hurt feelings that someone wouldn't obey their authority to incriminate themselves like they did at Durov. Applying to Laura Chen the same thing on an official fishing expedition where you look at there's all victims and they're really after a country. And Glenn Beck fired Laura Chin on just this allegation. What if she was a dupe victim too here? Should she lose her job? See, they hit you in the pocketbook. These players within the system, they'll hit you in the pocketbook. And that just shows me there's a real problem with this. Glenn Beck is up with that. That's not cool. Not cool at all. The conservative creator Lara Chen had her contract terminated by Blaze Media on Thursday, a day after she was implicated in a bombshell DOJ indictment alleging a Russian-influenced campaign. And then, on mere speculation, as it is reported on top of that, caught up in the operation was Tenet Media's founders, the indictment said. The filing did not list names. But Chen, Liam, Donovan are the only individuals who could match that description. See, none of these media groups seem worthy of the high standards of innocence until proven guilty, properly functioning American Republic demands. If these folks are culpable, let that be determined in open court that adheres to lawful due process so we can also judge the just us system and whether or not it decides want to weather an embarrassment in it, on its part on this overthrow that it's been committing against us. Stop giving these media groups and people like Glenn Beck your time, your mind, your money, the fiat notwithstanding, relative to who you would listen to. If I become unworthy, I demand you don't listen to me either. That's why I ask you to check me, send me whether I'm in error. I need an opportunity to correct myself. Because I talked to a lot of people. Again, within 1 week, 20,000 in syndicated places around the internet. So thank you very much again. I can't do that on the network by itself. So what I send out, it has to be impeccable, actually. As I've said to the miners over and over for years and years, you can't be wrong once against these folks. And I learned that the hard way myself, because originally, my very first interaction, getting my feet wet with this mining law stuff, walking into the lawyer's office, and they asked me a question, I made a statement, and the lawyer challenged me, and I didn't have the answer. I wasn't wrong, but I didn't have the proof in an answer. And that attorney used that to persuade 10 other people who did not read to go his way, and that guy was able to milk miners for a decade after, claiming to be the expert of the mining law, when he was wrong 100% of the time. He never won a case. It was all because my error wasn't that I was wrong. My error was that I didn't have the proof I was right. And I didn't know about that. And so you don't make that mistake either. And I try never to make that mistake again. And again, if you read the Protocols of Elders of Zion, that's one of our weaknesses and we have to protect against that. But moving back to this, Glenn Beck fired this woman right off the bat on just allegations, unperfected, unnamed, on this, on that, on speculation. And that's just despicable to me. I start to get a little bit angry about that. I don't know Laura Chen. I have nothing to do. Never heard of her, actually. Don't listen to Glenn Beck. I don't listen to a whole lot of people. So this is just my response, my reaction. This was pretty despicable. People losing their jobs. I have nothing against Tim Pool either. I just, some of the stuff he says, I had to question one of his last episodes. Now it turns out he might have been deceived. I don't know. Not the fact that he was deceived. He's using the fact that it was alleged that he was deceived to say he was deceived. This is another problem I have. But I'm not here to criticize more than to say we have to be careful, be cautious of where we get our information, watch how we're going to have to continue to move past all this problem so that those of us, and those of you that need to hear it, and those of us that want to provide it, we can still do it without adulteration or censorship. And if there is censorship, create systems around how to make it less injurious to us. Allow us to continue to be an informed populace, those of us that will. So, if you have your panties in a wad about yet another Russia did it, what would you think about this? Ukrainian anthem found in U.S. voter database code. A review of the software responsible for compiling voter lists in New Hampshire reportedly revealed that it was connected to servers outside the U.S. We've heard this story before, haven't we? Well, let's keep reading. Ukrainian as anthem has been found embedded in the source code of the voter database in the state of New Hampshire, the development of which had apparently been outsourced to offshore programmers. Elections officials have previously decided to replace the state's voter registration database before the upcoming 2024 presidential election and reportedly turned to a small Connecticut-based IT firm called WSD Digital to develop the software. However, upon reviewing the completed project, it was revealed that the firm had offshored some of the work, given that it posed a risk to unknown coders outside the U.S. having access to the software and potentially being able to manipulate voter lists. The New Hampshire officials hired a forensic firm to scour the code for signs of hidden malware. Listen very carefully on that. They hired a forensics firm to scour the code. I'm going to make another point about when we get done with this reading. The probe was reportedly revealed a number of unwelcome surprises, citing a person familiar with the investigation. These included the use of open source code, software which has been misconfigured to connect to servers outside the country, and the lyrics to the Ukrainian national anthem. But there shouldn't be any capacity for a system to connect to any but one server, should there? The misconfiguration means it can be configured at any time to connect to servers outside of the jurisdiction, including to foreign countries. So watch that little trick. It really shouldn't have a choice, should it? It should have protocols to protect against a wrongful connection as well. A programmer had hard-coded the Ukrainian national anthem into the database. No, Russian did it, folks. Putin did this. It's Putin interfering with your elections. The Ukrainian national anthem into the database in an apparent gesture of solidarity with Kyiv. And the state officials, if you read the story, are okay with solidarity. They might not want to see the candidates selected that not pledge solidarity with that cause, don't you think? Well, before any of you answer that, apparently not. State officials, however, have stated that none of the findings have amounted to evidence of wrongdoing and that all the issues had been resolved by the company in charge of the database development before it came into use. So, listen carefully. Who's in charge of the data? The company, not the Secretary of State of the state. Why? What? Quote, this was a disaster averted, the source said, noting the hackers could have potentially exploited the vulnerabilities to edit the state's voter rolls or use them to stoke election conspiracies. I don't think the admitted vulnerabilities are a conspiracy theory, do you? But be aware, if it hasn't already occurred to you, so-called forensic review is only as good as the skills of the auditor allow. Is the disaster here really and truly averted then? While the potential catastrophe in New Hampshire has apparently been averted, it reads, apparently. I just said that. The catastrophe is only apparently averted because they can't actually know, nor can they know of any follow-up agents within the system, witting or unwitting, which might reconfigure that software. Politico did a six-month-long investigation into the matter, and suggests that similar issues could pop up in other states due to a lack of oversight of the development of voter processing software. Quote, the technology vendors who build software use election day face razor-thin profit margins, the outlet wrote, noting that this provides little room for crucial investments in security and results in many states lacking a rigorous system to verify that what actually goes on into election software. So voting integrity hinges on profit and razor thin at that in this corporate non-governmental construct because it's lacking in a vigorous system to verify what actually goes into election software. Is that about right? That's not found as an existential vulnerability beyond the CIA-created conspiracy theory? Folks, all I can say is vote harder to the last Ukrainian. Vote harder for genocide to the last Palestinian. And most importantly, vote hardester for officials chosen by electors, not by your vote to evidence your solidarity to the occupational usurpation. Article goes on to say, meanwhile, the FBI reported last month that it was confident that Iran has been trying to interfere in upcoming elections in November and had allegedly sought to gain access to the presidential campaigns of both political parties. Tehran, however, has denied the accusations, calling them unsubstantiated and devoid of any standing, and insisting that it has no intention meddling with U.S. elections, which I'm hearing a lot of experts say the United States is fully well and capable of protecting itself. But anyway, that's right. Don't go after domestic razor-thin excuses allowing corruption. Focus on FBI phantoms that they want you to go to the unjust wars with so people can vote harder displaying their consent under the spell of the governmental confidence man. FBI confidence is not evidence. I said this last episode. Unless it is to evidence the failure of the government to serve the people in favor of the expeditious expendability under color of corporate, commercial, and corrupt national security interest. If for another abuse of law, back into West Asia we go, evidence withheld in Israeli killings of aid workers. Britain, Israel, and Australia are refusing to release evidence as the killing of an Australian aid worker and six colleagues in Gaza in April. Australian aid worker Zomi Frankman was killed in an Israeli drone attack along with six colleagues delivering aid to World Center Kitchen in Gaza on April 1st. It was no April Fool's joke. No open inquiry has been held. No judicial punishment has been handed out to the perpetrators by Israeli authorities, with only two Israeli defense members being dismissed and three reprimanded. Israel holds detailed audio from the drone footage of the attacks, but has not shown it to nor handed it over to Australian officials. The head of World Center Kitchen, Jose Andre, earlier called for release of the audio. Quote, we need to be saying what was the conversations, the radio conversations between the different officers and soldiers in charge of the saying that those cars were a target because they were of an imminent threat. Questions were put to the Department of Foreign Affairs seeking details about the special advisor Linskin's lack of access with the withheld Israeli drone audio with no reason received by deadline. The editor notes here responses received the day after publication did not address the question about the missing audio, instead stating the Australian government will continue to press for full and accountability, including any appropriate criminal charges. And ha-ha, let's laugh some more at that one. But in the UK, our independent colleagues at the Declassified UK have been pursuing the Ministry of Defence, who is also refusing to hand over another missing piece of the puzzle about the killing of the aid workers. Those killed in the World Central Kitchen convoy on April 1st were Australian Zomi Frankum, Jacob Flinger, an American-Canadian dual national, Damien Sobol of Poland, Safieddin Azam Yad Abadtuha, a Palestinian, and three British military veterans providing security, which were John Chapman, James Kirby, and Jim Henderson. And I understand not just that, but more workers were just targeted and killed by Satan Yehu and the Zionists in Rafah here just a day or so ago. And it was just reported that Israel agrees to pause its infighting in Gaza for a polio vaccine. So they're killing off the aid workers. They're now going into give polio vaccines, allowing those, wouldn't it just been better just to stop the genocide, stop what they call the war, the genocide, stop reducing the place to rubble, provide water and power and other essential services, just stop committing the genocide? Wouldn't that have been the right thing to do, better than another bioweapon attack at warp speed through a professed polio vaccine? And then again this week, Israeli strike on Gaza aid convoy kills 4 Palestinians. An Israeli airstrike on aid convoy carrying food and fuel to a Gaza hospital killed 4 Palestinians on Thursday, U.S.-based aid group Anera said. In a statement quoted by multiple media outlets, the Israeli Defense Forces said a number of armed assailants seized control of the vehicle in the front of the convoy and began to lead it. After the takeover and further verification that a precise strike on the armed assailant's vehicle could be carried out, the strike was conducted, the IDF said. The 4 Palestinians were in the lead vehicle of an Anera aid convoy bound for the Emirati Red Crescent Hospital in Rafah in southern Gaza, the aid group said. Soon after the convoy left the Israeli-controlled Kerem Shalom crossing into Gaza, 4 Palestinians from the community, quote, took control of the lead vehicle, citing concern that the route was unsafe and at risk of being looted, Anera said. Quote, Israeli authorities allege that the lead car was carrying numerous weapons. Every initial report from those at the scene indicate there no weapons were present, the organization said. The Israeli military and Israeli embassy in Washington could not immediately be reached for further comment. This is BTWRLM 593. As we continue to put two and two together here, look at the methodologies that are going on. What is done abroad is done at home. In this case, the United States government directly funds and agrees that Americans are expendable, despite all the wailing and moaning about Americanized IDF soldier Hirsch now, this week. One Zionist genocider killed here gets half a week's front page ad news from the biggest newspapers, while 41,000 Semitic Palestinians, including more than 13,000 children, have been murdered with not much of a peep. And this is even after the ICJ court determined around July 2024, you heard me report, Israel's presence in occupied Palestinian territories is illegal and should end. And now, even so, Israelis, finally maybe, Israelis realize that they can be killed by their own government for security considerations. Let's just highlight what I've been saying about using national security as the reason for being for killing, murder, fraud, whatever you want to do. Here, look at the method. It's over, going on over there, has happened over here. It's actually reversed in this case. 9/11 was our clue. And look at the players in that. Same players by this story as well. Israelis finally realize they can be killed by their own government. Is that any different than the United States? The open-air prison we call America? As I've been referencing, the open-air prison in Gaza was no different than us. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets in Israel to call upon the government of Benjamin Netanyahu to negotiate the release of the hostages still in Gaza Strip by Hamas, or held by Hamas. The protests were sparked by the deaths of 6 of the hostages whose bodies were recovered by the military last week. Quote, the anger in the streets today is because for some time, Netanyahu has claimed that the destruction of Hamas and the return of the hostages are related. The death of the 6 hostages on Saturday revealed that the two goals are contradictory. Most Israelis are now realizing this now, and they are angry, Dr. Ori Goldberg, expert of Israeli politics, explains. Goldberg does point out that the Israeli streets now regarding the government are a hostile factor is a new development, and that while Israelis do support in varying degrees the notion of a war against Hamas, the deaths of those 6 hostages last week changed the mood and the vibe. The reports are coming out that they're now understanding the military killed them. Hamas came out with interviews of the people, the hostages alive, just moments, days before, and prove that it wasn't them that did any of it. Israelis are beginning to realize that they cannot simply accept every government decision justified by recourse to security considerations, because these security considerations can end up killing Israelis. When are Americans going to realize this? That due to these national security considerations, they are expendable. Everything they own and do is expendable pursuant to the PATIROT Act and appropriations following all that to continue it. They are presumed criminals. Their innocence is expendable. Look at the news as we hear it all the time. Presumed guilty all the time. If that wasn't already in the courts, it's been put on steroids. Where are Americans going to stop this? Where are they going to stop making these excuses, too, for their expendability at the hands of a rogue state, essentially, and stop it? And we heard last week, as I reframed the manifold problems in his unpopular decision Starmer is going to make, and the pain he intends to cut out the deep rot antagonistic to the plans of the state, the monarch, more clearly unfolding in Palestine. Expedient expendability in the national interest, the organic Brits being genocided through constriction or displacement of every aspect of their lives as well, the model being replayed. I just wasn't whistling Dixie about the societal destruction over there. Talking about the stench and deep rot in Britain, pain and unpopular decisions, Starmer exhorts in last episode. The U.S. government funds the constriction, the displacement, or the expedient expendability, expropriation, and death of Americans in the national interest as well, and has been, right? Obama? About you, Kamala? Mean Harris? This destructive trajectory has not changed at all since 9/11. We've talked about this periodically as we go through to re-show you. That's pretty much where this thing, they opened up, they took down the veil, at least to my eyes. Not even under Trump, whom actually accelerated the expendability at warp speed under color of a health emergency without a law to support him. Just as the genocide being waged in Palestine by the Zionist Federation movement under color of a religious people and a legitimate state, though being an illegal belligerent occupier installed in Palestine by the very monarch now turning its destructive intent on the people of Britain. The protests in Israel, while unlikely to cause Netanyahu to resign, also highlight an increasing polarization within the Israeli society, as Luciano Zakara, adjunct associate professor at Georgetown University in Qatar. The protests in Britain have been effectively shut down, the riots an excuse to increase the police state attacking free expression and further constraining the communication conduits of the people. As we're watching different countries all pulling the same strings, if you will, the same method. Zatara also argues that the protests are unlikely to affect the Israeli-Hamas negotiations, quote, since Netanyahu seemed, since the very beginning, not too worried about the opposition on part of the society. Well, besides, he helped get Hamas put in place just so he could pull this off, apparently. Talked about that as well. So this increasing polarization advance in America are making effective protests or proper action unlikely. You see the mirror here working. Things are not looking too good in the land of the free and home of the slave, I can tell you, as we look reflectively on what they're doing there and how it's working here. And the canary in the coal mine in Israel, seen in the American carnival mirror, appears to be taking its last gasp. And by the totality of the campaign of fear, intimidation, and dread, and the barbarity caused by the Zionista, Pakistan declares Israel Netanyahu a terrorist. As we are now seeing countries stepping up, the Yemenis did, the Houthis did right away, to start to stop this thing, as I guess the best they can. I don't know what you're going to do. You've got the biggest punk in the world, the United States, supporting the little punk in the world that actually controls the United States. Undue influence. Under pressure from the right-wing protesters, so I guess your protests work, folks, in all countries. Pakistan's government declared Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a terrorist Friday, demanding that the leader be brought to justice for alleged war crimes against Palestinians. The statement by Rana Sanullah, advisor to Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif on political and public affairs, was part of a deal with religious political party Tehreek-e-Labbaik, Pakistan, or TLP, to end its days-long sit-in. Just a sit-in did this on a key road outside the capital. Quote, Satan Yehu is a terrorist and a perpetrator of war crimes, said Sanaila, acceding to a key TLP demand. The advisor sat flanked by TLP leaders and ministers for information, Atala Tarar, at a press conference in Islamabad. Thousands of TLP supporters rallied near the capital last Saturday to condemn Israeli strikes in Gaza. They demanded that the government declare Satan Yehu a terrorist, or boycott Israel products and send aid to Palestinians. Remember, this is all coming after they killed some more aid workers and the issues around Rafah. After the rally, many continue to sit in at a busy intersection that connects Islamabad to the neighboring garrison by city Rawalpindi, causing a severe disruption for commuters. Pakistani Foreign Minister Ishaq Dar has called the situation in Gaza a genocide. Quote, we demand that he, Satan Yehu, be put on trial, the Pakistani Prime Minister top aide said Friday. Quote, we wholeheartedly condemn this cruelty, Israel's actions in Israel, and all the powers that are involved in it. That then points to us. So it's about time here, I think, some country other than the Houthis step up to stop what must be stopped instead of stopping, again, Pavel Durov while on a fishing expedition, dredging up nothing applicable except maybe to gain control of the communication conduits of people for their West, the Seven Eyes, the 20 Eyes, cognitive warfare against us. It's rising now relative to the opposition to a genocide. I don't know what else you call it. I've done a report on that. Fear and legal retribution may have forced UK to scale back arms sales to Israel. London announces Monday that it would suspend 30 of 350 arms export licenses to Israel over the clear risk that the weapons could be used to commit and facilitate a serious violation of international humanitarian law. Dr. Macronis Cornelos, Europe's foremost experts in Middle East affairs, tells us what prompted the partial about face. We read the article. So keep track what the objective standard here as you're reading this, the clear risk that the weapons could be used to commit or facilitate a serious violation of international law. That's already been determined. So the UK's behind the gate, but they're having to face this statement that was made in the world. So all to see. I told you this was going to be somewhat, the ICJ decision was important. Even if you don't recognize the jurisdiction, that's 15 more people that looked at the international law, and they only restated international law and its violations. But listen to the contempt for the law by these above-the-law genocidal psychopaths. Embattled Israel Prime Minister lashed out at the Starmer government on Tuesday over its decision to suspend some arms exports to Tel Aviv, vowing that the, quote, shameful decision, close quote, would not change Israel's determination to defeat Hamas, a genocidal terrorist organization that savagely murdered 1,200 people on October the 7th, including 14 British citizen. Look how they twisted that around. What Satan Yehu committed turning that around. The action by the UK here are irrespective of the recalcitrant genocidal psychopath intent or its purported reasoning to justify that barbaric murderous intent that Satan Yehu tries to flip the burden on. Remember, it didn't happen and start on October 7th. Novica is where it started. The infiltration of a Zionist party, a political party into a foreign land by the British monarchy, or with the help of the British monarchy. Then, subsequently, the ratification by most of the main powers of the rest of the world, who are now tainted by that decision, including Russia, the second one to come out to do this, I think it was, that I read to you. Quote, instead of standing with Israel, a fellow democracy defending itself against barbarism, Britain's misguided decisions will only embolden Hamas, Satan Yehu alleged. British Foreign Secretary David Lammy announced partial restrictions on the sale of arms to Israel, 30 out of 350, on Monday, assuring that Britain continues to support Israel's right to self-defense in accordance with international law. Well, we've already read the law. We already know that what has been talked about. There is no right of defense by a belligerent occupier under international law. Israeli Foreign Prime Minister Israel Katz expressed disappointment with London's decision, 30 out of 350, your folks, saying Tel Aviv acts, quote, in accordance with international law and expects all allied nations like Britain to recognize that every day. So clearly, as I've said in the past, psychopaths gonna be psychopaths. These criminals are in the open defiance of the law every day, he says, or anyone insisting by applying the law, even as awkwardly done here, stopping only 30 shipments. But you watch Britain blink here. This is the point. But it's restated as a half-hearted commitment as well. The British Defense Secretary John Healey assured London remains committed in supporting Israel, but also has a duty to tell the hardest truths to its closest friends regarding its concerns. 30 out of 350. And continue. This is not a determination by the government that Israel has breached international law. It's a conclusion, according to the rules that we have, that there is a clear risk that some of UK's arms exports could be used in breaches of international law in the Gaza conflict. Campaigners demanding for more transparency on Britain's military assistance for Israel criticized Monday's move as a half measure. Quote, I have asked the Foreign Secretary what role Britain has played in the flying surveillance aircraft over Gaza and whether the British Army base in Cyprus is being used as a staging point for flights to Israel. He refused to answer, former Labour Party leader turned independent MP Jeremy Corbyn wrote. And therein lies the vulnerability to action. Nothing is half pregnant. The admission for 30 admits the scrutiny of the other 320 shipments or the appropriations, despite London's intention to avoid legal retribution, as we'll read. Amnesty International also grilled Lamy, saying that the partial freeze also export licenses filled with loopholes and does not go far enough, and dubbing the move to continue the supply of the F-35's parts as catastrophic failure for arms control and justice. Quote, I suspect that behind the Starmer government's decision, there was a fear of possible judicial actions against the government for its so far blatant inaction in the face of Israel's violations. A possible class action by many NGOs for not implementing British laws might have pushed the British government to act, unfortunately, very late, Dr. Marco Cornelos, a veteran Italian diplomat and former prime ministerial advisor on Middle East affairs, commented on Monday's decision by London. The level of violence reached by Israeli forces operating in Gaza and the evident violation of the law regulating the armed conflicts could not be ignored any longer by the UK, especially under the Labour government, Cornelos believes. And I believe this is an opportunity for anyone in Britain with standing to challenge whether proper determination of the risk, not the fact though, but that there is the clear risk that the weapons could be used to commit and facilitate a serious violation of international law, and the likelihood of success for now without yet considering the corruptness of the monarch's court, because it's also said in the article, Israel has been accused of serious crimes in a war in Gaza. The United Nations Special Rapporteur, Francis Albanese, telling media in March that there was reasonable grounds to suggest that Israel is committing the crimes of genocide against the Palestinian group. Last December, South Africa took Israel to The Hague, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide. And so given that the UK government just blinked, that there is a risk should provide a way for someone in Britain, or a group of you, whether you're singular or organization, probably better, to challenge the rest of those 350 and any others, even the entirety of what's going on, to stop it from the inside as you can, forcing compliance with the local law or evidence that the officials don't have to bring the entire false front government into question. And now hear that the UK itself has questioned those 30 of the 350 export licenses, arms sales to Israel, or other appropriations. Anyone in Canada, Australia, the Five Eyes, the Googly Eyes, and anywhere else, for that matter, paying taxes can likely bring a challenge and in a general scrutiny of the issue, at least for UK, to the UK population. or then to the rest of the world for anybody who wants to. This is a big deal if you look at it the way, again, as I say, it was the UK blinked. Completely in denial, now they have an assessment. You cannot challenge the appropriateness of the assessment. And it, even if the corrupts are, the courts are corrupt, as we think they are, you will bring this thing to the public stage. It gives you a license, if you will, to do that. And for implausible sounding deaths to proven killers, as I've been saying, these communicable criminals are not going to let up promoting their fraud. Just this week, now a new common cold, gonna get you promo, listen for it here, as we keep moving on, the death in the world, the destruction, the promotion of all this as well, when we should have the ability to stop it, and I think we do, local law. Here we hear it again. It's in every country. You're not supposed to be doing using these monies for all this genocide, this even war crimes, even the risk, see, the risk-based stuff. Fascinating how simple we could get at it. Highly contagious COVID strain could be responsible for a major future spike. The health official, I'm only talking about this because this is the news, this is what you're being faced with, this is what the public is being faced with, and I need to have people aware it's coming, as I've been saying, they're promoting again, coming into a fall. The health official told the outlet that XEC has spread relatively quickly and has been reported in Germany and the Netherlands and other parts, the nether parts, I suppose, of Western Europe. Doctors and scientists are tracking yet another COVID, in capitals here now, variant named XEC. Is that a rock group or something, some pop group? Which could surpass the latest hyperinfection subvariant, KP311. Which, is that a Windows version? I think it is. Which is believed, see how they do this? They get familiarity put back in your head. It's interesting how they pull this off. Which is believed to be the most common subvariant across the United States. Believed. It's all believed. So let us toss out the spoiled matter from this word salad. Remember, COVID means common cold. And remember, the common cold is seemingly contagious. In other words, it's endemic. It never goes away. It's always contagious. I mean, it keeps adapting to maintain its communicable nature. It's considered endemic everywhere. It's ubiquitous everywhere. And there is no vaccine that can stop the common cold, nor is it required pursuant to local communicable disease law. And it is admitted any jab said to treat COVID or COVID-19 did not and cannot stop anything. So if the common cold is endemic and it can't be stopped, what did these communicable criminals use as a measure for hyper-infectious? What is above infectious transmission that can't be stopped, that hyper is even worse? Does it merely mean looking at someone will cause you to come down with the common cold? They don't explain that part. The subvariant XEC was first detected in Germany and is, quote, just getting started now around the world and here, a California-based doctor told Los Angeles Times. And what's going to take many weeks, a couple of months, before it really takes hold and starts to cause the wave. What? Of the fall seasonal common cold and flu, right? XEC, though, is definitely taking charge. That does appear to be the next variant, the source added, but it's months off from getting into high levels. Currently, the XEC variant, subvariant, isn't so widespread as not being tracked by the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC variant, a tracker website, the LA Times reported. So the beginning of the common cold season is upon us, apparently, right? And here's the bioweapon promo, because we know that there is no vaccines for any of it as a matter of federal law without the dual use under local communicable disease law. Any of these novel jabs is a bioweapon. I don't care how you slice it. It's either not applicable as a communicable disease to have the vaccine, or it's not an infectious agent for which the so-called vaccine, the vaccine, could stop it. The article goes on, yet the updated COVID vaccines that the U.S. officials approved in late August are designed against the strain KP2, which is effective against the current circulating variants. It is not, however, effective against XEC, as the latest vaccine was designed against something substantially different from this newer strain that seems to be biding its time, is the problem with all common colds and vaccines. And never forget, the UK just admitted these bioweapons are safe and effective with a 60% irreparable harm handicap. You're not harmed enough for injury claims if you can't show suffering more than 60% harm. But Dr. Elizabeth Hudson, the regional chief of infectious disease at Kaiser Permanente in Southern California, said she'd believe the new vaccines would provide generous enough protections against XEC, as there is, quote, some overlap because these are all sub-sub-sub-grandchildren of the original Omicron. So there is still going to be some level of protection there. But remember, Omicron's novel. It's a novel protein synthetic. These aren't even infectious. They are travel in the injections themselves. And all this that they're talking here is a lie, because it has been admitted these synthetic jabs do not stop transmission of anything, and the ability to stop the transmission defines what it, that it is the vaccine and as a potential treatment, as any reading local communicable disease law will see, despite that the common cold is not considered a communicable disease that a vaccine can stop. These lies from top to bottom on this by the expert or doctors, even the doctors that would not use the vaccines in preference to other treatment, don't use communicable disease law as their authority, as I'm finding out, even this late. There's COVID here, COVID, unlike the flu. There's your distinction between the two. COVID is the common cold. COVID-19 is the common flu. COVID, unlike the common flu, is difficult to predict because it seems to come in two waves each year as opposed to one cold season wave. Quote, we'll really have to watch, because the overall info on it is not super robust now, but I would imagine over the next couple of weeks, particularly if it starts to creep up higher and higher, we will be hearing a little bit more about it, Hudson said. Imagine, folks, because that's all we get to do is imagine. Let our imagination run away with us. Imagine that. And be afeared. The common cold is creeping up on you. And don't forget, school just went in. How many years we've been going through? Well, common cold's going to be coming. Flus are coming. You're going to get all kinds of things happening. Kids went back to school. And they don't find that a vector. Pretty amazing to me. Anyway, let me dress up one more thing. This word salad mentions COVID, unlike the flu, as I was highlighting, is difficult to predict because it seems to come in two waves each year as opposed to one cold season wave. It's only a statement defining the common cold. What's left undesignated and undefined for the purpose of obfuscation is the seasonal flu, designated for purpose of the great COVID swindle as COVID-19, which doesn't occur twice a year, but once, what is called seasonal, the seasonal flu. So COVID, the common cold, is difficult to predict because it seems to come in two waves each year. And the other, COVID-19, is the seasonal flu. So you can see how they make a scary monster about nothing more abnormal here than the common cold or the seasonal flu that happens every year. It could be tied to a rise right after school lets in as well. And that's the entire story about that. Just that simple. Except that what they're sending around the world, it's caused irreparable harm. And I've been trying to get people to stop getting on that fast track. Just step out the way. It's easy to identify. Might be tired of hearing what me say this, but there's going to be a lot of people hurt continuing. They keep bringing these stories up. And people don't think. And then they turn around and they're afraid by other people around them, because now they're going to be caused, the transmission is happening there. You can look at me and give it to me. And nobody settles down to start figuring out it's all a big story, a big fairy tale. And it's all driven by these psychopaths or people who want control and or who are making profit. P.T. Barnum, he would be proud that they're using this technique, that there is a sucker born every minute and all day. at the very least. That he didn't really promote harm. In this next article here in the Progress Report, I think, on how well they are doing to mentally incapacitate or presume your little ones will need their professional medical and psychological intervention for further behavior control to the humanist new normal, which is all this thing seems to be about and towards. Teenagers who vape are more likely to suffer from poor mental health, says a study. A new study has found that Australian high school students with symptoms of severe depression or poor well-being are twice as likely to have tried vaping. The study also found that one-fifth of the students in junior high school had moderate to severe symptoms of depression and demonstrated the need for early intervention for their mental health and vaping. Quote, for those who had low well-being, there were 100% more likely to vape than those with high stress were 74% more likely to vape, she said. So this is a mentally not very well population. What did Australia just go through but some of the worst lockdowns we had ever heard? The study shows a clear correlation between mental health and vaping, but does not say if vaping causes poor mental health or vice versa. Stocking says it is likely bidirectional based on evidence from previous studying. Adding nicotine to the product has made it undeniably an addictive drug. Quote, nicotine is an incredibly effective drug on the brain. Once it's in the bloodstream, it hits your brain within seconds. And there's some people that have explained to me and said they've used nicotine to stop the effects of what they call the COVID, which I'm telling you, it doesn't have an infectious principle, an infectious agent that was ever non-fraudulently demonstrated. However, the effects of that flu that I was telling you about, that seasonal flu that was a variant, a very powerful one that was coming for many years, apparently was very difficult. And so that's what the government glommed onto to prove this was a different, this is more powerful, to make it scarier. But nicotine is an interesting chemical in the body. So anyway, in this case, they're talking about it being addictive. And these are three aspects that make vaping here the perfect storm are the social aspect of doing it with friends, the addictive nicotine, and the risk-taking behavior involved, explained Dan Hermans, a professor of youth mental health and neurobiology at the University of Sunshine Coast. The average age of those who participated in the study was 13. The study did not survey public schools either, which Stockings admits did not allow for them to hear from kids who are the most vulnerable, the most disadvantaged, or are the schools that have the most problems. Quote, if we want to try to improve mental health, then we want to try to prevent vaping. Clearly, we've got to do these two things together, she added. It's a critical period for development when they have just started high school. They need to be doing a better job of supporting them so that they don't turn to vapes to help with their anxiety or stress or depression. So let us not forget the prevalence of the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors use among people committing mass shootings and other crimes that seem to be at least correlated with these. And whether or not these SSRI medications is a cause or not, it evidences the psychologically unstable population and how to identify some of the most vulnerable victims of it already by their teens. They're already here at this level of problem in their teens. And the evidence of that is this, the desire to vape or the vaping. So this seems to me a report on the progress of the cognitive warfare on the young and how good they're doing against your little ones, it seemed to me, actually. And helping those teens to mental incapacitation from the Stop Telling Me How to Speak and Associate Department. U.S. state advocates using gender-neutral family terms. People should stop calling children son and daughter to promote health equity, according to the Vermont Department of Health. If you understand what I've been talking about all these years, what I call these folks, these little ones, your little goats as the animals that they are in the system, I call them sons and daughters, and you see it right here. Vermont Department of Health wants you to call them something other than that, for health equity. Not your family, not for the good of your family, for health equity. The Vermont Department of Health published advice encouraging parents. And again, I got to interject a little bit here. Listen to the words of state indenturement. Parent is the custodian of the ward of the state called a child. So let's read through the redefine for yourself, reframe what they're saying. The Vermont Department of Health, VDH, published advice encouraging parents in the northeastern United States to use the word child or kid when referring to their children because the term sons and daughters are not inclusive. So I wonder when the government will dictate that change to all newly published editions of the Bible. It is commanded, gender-neutral term kid being preferable, it shall be henceforth forbidden for Bibles to use the phrase Son of God. Jesus Christ is to be referred to as the little goat of God. Kind of fitting of a synthetic secular source, isn't it? Kid you not. Use son and daughter instead of child, as well as mother and father instead of parent. This will also help establish the jurisdictional chasm between state's legal wards and custodians and your private progeny and relationship to them. As you've heard me for years talk about this, they come right out to tell you now. They want you to change how you describe, I'll say, your property. That the people and their sons and daughters are beneath the FBI duties also proves the obvious. The federal government serves itself, but not you. The story I'm going to read here, it encourages trafficking and encourages that trafficking industrial complex. Is it any wonder why these exploitation crimes are rampant and connected to the state child welfare services operating with federal funds and incentives? As we read, FBI agents feel child sex crimes are beneath them. A Department of Justice Inspector General report released on Thursday said the FBI is failing to properly investigate the sex offenses against children. Remember, wards of the state. These are like trustees. These are like people in prison. When you look at it, when you start understanding what these words actually mean. Against the sex offense against children, noting that individual agents are juggling dozens of cases at one time. Additionally, 300 child sex cases filed from 2021 to 2023, the FBI did not follow up on 42. So, how thoroughly then were the dozens of juggled cases being investigated? We don't hear about the outcome of those. Apparently, it's more important the FBI take time to be only confident to blame Iran than certain to track down predators here. Is that about right? Is that what I'm reading into this? The report by the IG also noted that 50% of the child sex cases during the time were never referred to local law enforcement, and of the other 50%, only 43% were referred within 24 hours, which is required by FBI regulations. An attorney for the victims of Larry Nassar, the former U.S. Olympic gymnastics doctor who was sentenced to life in prison for abusing dozens of gymnasts, said that the report showed that the FBI is simply not doing its job when it comes to protecting our children from the monsters among us who stalk them. It is now clear that Larry Nassar scandal could happen again today. This has nothing to do with what is systemic as well. They're not going to talk about that. The former FBI Special Agent Jane Turner, who worked for the Bureau for 25 years and led the FBI's programs combating crimes against women and child sex victims, said that the FBI doesn't focus on child sex crimes because agents feel it's beneath them and that they prefer to focus on headline-grabbing cases like terrorism or January 6th. well, or being conjunctive here, cases like terrorism or January 6th, let's correct the FBI sensationalism and self-aggrandizement of what we know were misdemeanor trespasses at best in that, if a crime at all, let alone terrorism. So they build that up as well, instead of looking out for these other crimes. The FBI would rather exalt minor trespass over combating crimes against women and child sex victims, it seems to me. This shows again the mileage the government is getting through its war of terror against the people. We can read, the FBI retaliated against Turner after she blew the whistle on the agency's lack of action on those crimes. She eventually won the largest compensatory package legally possible for federal agents. Quote, they've, the FBI, never considered these kinds of crimes worthy of their investigative abilities. I mean, that's the bottom line, Turner added later, noting that solving sex crimes is not the type of work that nets agents awards. Quote, I guess you have to have little stars to get anybody to do anything anymore. It really is true. Quote, it's been a situation that has been happening over and over and over again, and if that doesn't tell you that there's something wrong with that system, nothing does, Turner continued. 25 years ago, we wrote up this 30-page massive thing pointing out the FBI's derelictions, and, of course, nothing. Crickets. Now, we know about crickets behind the woodshed, don't we? Yeah. Now, Turner was the resident RA in the Native American reservation, which the FBI has jurisdiction over. She said even then, agents would close sex cases as car accidents or other events to avoid working on them. Where do you think they then got the COVID, blaming everything on everything but, you know, COVID? Amazing, right? And never forget, the astute late Russell Means observed, we all live on the res. He said, the United States is one big reservation, and we're all in it. Even your res agency U.S. representatives. We can read, while U.S. Senator Dick Durbin said he was going to hold hearings on the issue, neither former CIA agent Kiriakou nor Turner believes it is going to lead to any substantial changes. No accountability. Quote, nothing ever comes out of these kinds of hearings. Let's be real blunt here. As you guys know, the lawmakers are scared to death of the FBI, Turner contended. Quote, don't train your lens on me, they say. That's what their concern is. When you raise an issue, is the FBI going to be looking at them? But we're confident Iran done it, like Putin done it before Iran done it, folks. And if FBI agents feeling child sex crimes are beneath them isn't a shock enough, Intel shock strategy shakeup may doom Biden's bid to reshore microchip manufacturing. U.S. microchip giant Intel faces what's been characterized as the most difficult moment in the 56-year history, hiring banksters to advise the company on whether the firm slash or sell off its manufacturing business. That's bad news for Washington, which greenlit $280 billion in funding in 2022 toward boosting domestic semiconductor manufacturing. I've talked to you about that. Well, no, decided the disadvantage we knew what was going to happen from the 80s when they decided to do that. And what's happening today? And the way the life changes, I told you, would alter how this could be implemented, and it apparently can't. It's not so simple. The news carries a grave significance for Washington and Axios, pointing out in a report last Friday that Intel isn't just one of America's oldest U.S. chip makers, but, quote, a key national security asset, close quote, signaling the U.S.'s ability, or as it happens, inability, to compete with Taiwan, South Korea, China, and other chip-making power players in an increasingly demanding world market for microchips. And as I was saying, when it was decided to offshore our high-tech chip manufacturing in the 80s, most everyone, but the government geniuses, it seems, knew what that was going to be a mistake and that it would come back to bite us. So here we have it, its importance despite the ubiquity of microchips today. This technology is of critical national interest, a key national interest asset that was handed away to the world. It has now gone the way of greenlit subsidy because the asset was mishandled. Like green religious energy subsidies, the economic realities come home to roost relative to maintaining a badly conceived agenda. As we read, the current administration has made subsidies to microchip manufacturers a key plank of its economic agenda, in addition to a broad array of civilian uses from computers to vehicles. Computers like Intel produce chips for use in military and space applications. In fact, I'll interject. I was in the company that worked in R&D. That's what we mostly focused on in the beginning of that job, was military and space application chips. And they take a whole lot different approach in making those, much more durable and other things. Anyway, the company's multi-year $100 billion U.S. expansion plans fell by the wayside after its stagnant second quarter earnings, sparking massive layoffs of over 15% of its workforce in August. In late 2008, remember, that's where they've created fraud being money. And that's where we're going now. That's why they're going to have this. That's why they're having this trouble today. Intel introduced the Intel Core lineup of multi-core processors, assuring its superiority over competitors for over a decade before being surpassed by AMD in 2022. A few short years on, Intel has dropped out of the top 10 largest global microchip manufacturers entirely by market capitalization. If this country was not set on the course of unsound money destruction back in the 80s with Reaganomics, accelerated by Clintonomics, this would be a disaster, but turbocharging that globalista greenlighting, parity-driven catastrophe is the plan for Bidenomics and beyond. Trumponomics, appearing to champion the tail wag the dogonomics started by Reagan, we've come now full circle to once again cause a banker and corporate collision, driving government decisions clearly for private profit here, not by rational decision-making for the good welfare of everyone in the country. And again, you can have all these agendas and plans. Can they be fulfilled? In this case, they're not really planned to be fulfilled. All these nomics, these presidential nomics, were set up for a takedown. And for here purported good welfare of the global south, we read, as they're bringing this thing in, the global parity, this is all that you have to really focus in on, why all this is happening. A BRICS blockchain payment system game changer amid unstoppable de-dollarization. As I read that title, the promotion going on of all this to have us focus on things that are not where they're going to allow it to be fulfilled. Moscow's decision to create a new BRICS blockchain-based payment system is a game-changing development for a multipolar world, Christopher Douglas Ems, head of the brokerage division of LM Investment, said. And he'll explain the trap as we read the article, too. I think it's a huge, huge, huge and significant development because blockchain is an immutable payment. And what that means is it can't be messed with. It also removes any element, really, or corruption, because when you make that payment, it's totally transparent. And once it's made, no one can ever delete it. It has an online digital footprint that anyone can look up, which is totally transparent and also secure and fast, the expert noted. It's only transparent and security for the they, it's fast. If you don't behave correctly, and it's gone. So the transparency is not for us, actually. It's for the they, the government, essentially. The security is for them. And it's forever, you hear. An immutable transaction refers to a transaction that once recorded cannot be altered or deleted, and this is the characteristic, is the primarily associated with blockchain technology. As all economies are different, the expert added, he is no fan of the one-currency-fits-all approach. He recalled the disaster that the euro has been. Well, unless it's cryptocurrency of token citizenship in the Siberian Gulag blockchained to the existing global financial system, as I've explained, and he confirms when we read, quote, I think we may see a currency that is backed on a basket of different BRICS nation currencies, be that Russian ruble, Chinese renminbi, the Indian rupee, the South American rand, and these kinds of large economies coming together and forming something that will essentially allow everyone to clear payments between each other in a lot of better ways, the financial analyst said. Quote, I think we may see a currency that is backed on a basket of different BRICS national currencies. Is exactly what the SDR was about. Remember, it had a little bit of gold underneath. He's explaining this whole thing. Exactly explaining the commoditization and production will cover the special drawing right in every nation, and is now will be. By doing that and then engaging it, will be now sustainably subject, and by that, indentured. As I've explained, this guy's coming out to tell you exactly the same thing, the expert. And he exactly explains the problems that they're having. Except, you're seeing the fulfillment of an idea here, and how fast it's being done. Again, parity of all these currencies. They actually talk about this. If you read enough, you'll see there's a problem like right now, Russia and China. Their economies are not the same. They're actually really similar, but because of the interest rates, they're different. Well, you bring everybody into parity, that goes away. You just have a commonality of economies of production. And they just have a value. And that all is blockchained, and that UPC code comes to bear. Everything gets a number and an identity and a value. And you want to see how global financial system programmability works in the future? It's in the daily notice today. Ukraine's IMF paymasters demand currency devaluation and toughen tax regimes as Kiev drowns in debt. Don't know if anyone else had noticed, but the entire global system is debt. And as soon as you accept any of it, you are drowning in debt. Because you have no way to pay debt off with debt. And so goes your programmable token citizenship to enjoy your civil right to pay taxes and enjoy punishments and pains, as it all says in Title 42, USC 1981, to be devalued in your life to austerity only faster as your IMF paymasters demand currency devaluation and a toughened tax regime. Reading it right out of the news here, folks, if you just apply it to what's going on. And I'm sure you thought that I was talking about Ukraine, somewhere over there. And this can't happen to protected sound money systems. So, again, it's in the notice, it's in the news, it's in the setup for us. Choose ye this day. I hope something I said informs you enough to look around. Just don't stand in the way of the car racing over the cliff. Don't be at that cliff's edge either. And hopefully you'll be able to protect yourself when you see stuff coming. You'll be able to hear what I'm saying about some of the remedies in the law. To insist on make sure the law is properly done is one of the main things you see over and over. No one wants to do the law part, the black and white. So hopefully that'll help you. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 593. And I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips or Nature Will.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. It's time to learn behind the woodshed where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum.
drums behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold in the fight for truth.
Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed stand.